You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Joining me on the line now is Wanda Morris, and she's the executive director of Dying with Dignity Canada. Wanda Morris spoke at the most recent Idea City here in Toronto, and she joins us on the line now today. Wanda, thanks for being here on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so very much for having me.
Your reaction, if I may get it first off, to the federal government decision on Friday, announcing the decision it would appeal the BC Supreme Court ruling on assisted suicide. I know this was hardly unexpected, but what was your reaction nonetheless?
Well, in a sense, disappointing, because the argument that had been made was so compelling. The judgment that Justice Lynn Smith brought down from BC was very strong. But at the same time, not unexpected, and because the law was changed, the court decision happened in BC, because it's a federal law, it will of course affect all of Canada.
Yeah.
So I can understand the interest in appealing it to the BC Court of Appeal and ultimately to the Supreme Court of Canada.
Well, in fact, the Federal Justice Department might well argue that if they were here, that it was their responsibility to do just that.
Right. I think the disappointing part, Dale, was that part of what Justice Lynn Smith had said was she had granted Gloria Taylor, who was, the woman with very severe ALS,
yeah,
she had granted her a constitutional exemption to say, no matter what the courts ultimately decide, you have the right to have assisted dying. And the federal government has announced that they're going to appeal that decision as well. So what they're really doing is playing with the peace of mind of Gloria, and that's the part I find the most difficult to accept.
I was surprised. I thought maybe they would leave that part of it alone, but one assumes if they're going to go through the appeal process, they would not, they couldn't let that stand. I don't know.
Well, they could. It's actually two completely separate processes.
You think they could have, eh? Yeah.
They could have. So I was disheartened that they would play with Gloria in that manner. I thought that was cruel.
Now, some of the arguments here are fairly basic, and and it's a difficult argument to have, and every time it comes up on Zoomer Radio, we agonize over it as well. We listen to people on one side who say no one must assist in a suicide because of the possibility of abuse. Let me start there. How do you counter that argument from your side that, well, if we did this, if we allowed doctors to assist in suicides, Where the heck would that ever take us someday?
Sure. Well, and let me start first off by just talking about the language, because we're not actually talking about assisting a suicide. Because a suicide is when someone has their whole life before them. What we're talking about is assisting somebody who is facing unbearable suffering and an incurable condition and helping them to have a gentle death.
Well, I know, but it's still what it is. You can't gild the lily on that. It is still suicide.
Well, leaving that aside for the moment, it takes us into then the issue of can you protect the weak and the vulnerable?
Yeah.
And I think here, if we just use a little bit of common sense, when you look at what the court challenge is asking for, you look at the other five jurisdictions that around the world where this is legal, and they're not just opening up and saying, okay, anyone can walk into the office of a doctor and ask for support.
Right.
You have to have unbearable suffering and an incurable condition. So for someone to be abused, then what that means is I'd have to say, okay, if I, waiting for grand to go and I can't really wait much longer to get my hands on my inheritance, I then have to somehow find a doctor who's willing to fake that she's got cancer,
yeah,
or ALS or some other horrendous condition. So the safeguards that are in place are very strong, and the research that's been done to say, these five jurisdictions where we have this, how are the safeguards working? And the research is very clear. It says the safeguards do, in fact, work.
Well, of course, you'd never know when it wasn't working either, I suppose, unless certain cases came to mind. But it's pretty extreme to think of the fact that engaging in this abuse, if in fact a doctor is part of the process, and in fact the doctor is, that would be a widespread problem. It sounds pretty alarmist to me.
Yeah, I think you've absolutely nailed it, because to think about what would have to be in play for the abuse to happen, I mean, we'd have to have witnesses that are colluding with doctors, and frankly, I mean, it just seems very far-fetched, and I think a lot of the resistance to what we're asking for is based on fear-mongering.
Well, but there can be abuse on both sides of the argument as well. There can be abuses with the criminal code the way it stands now. There could be abuses. It's a possibility if the law were changed. Either abuses are an inevitable, although not large necessarily, part of any law.
Yes, and
you know,
I think that's such an excellent point, because it's like when we say we don't want this law, we're scared about, are we weak and vulnerable, that seems to imply that right now everything is perfectly good.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that there's been studies that have been done in both the Netherlands and Belgium where this is legal, and in Australia and New Zealand where it's not, to look at, well, what happens right now? Are there cases where someone is assisted to die, whether they're in a coma or for what other reason, without actually saying, yes, I consent to that? And there are. In Canada, doctors will tell you there's a don't ask, don't tell policy,
mm-hmm,
where things happen. So it's not like we're saying, everything is perfect now, we need to change it. What we're saying is there is a real problem right now. There's a lot of things going on behind closed doors. We need to bring this out and to appropriately regulate it.
Well, and one way of bringing it out might be to have this appeal hearing, the appeal launched by the federal government. But the problem is, in the shorter term, Gloria Taylor does not get her wishes.
Mm-hmm. Although what I understand is that the feds will seek to overturn the constitutional exemption that Gloria Taylor has been granted. And, of course, the Court of Appeal may say that they refuse to hear that, or they may hear it and refuse to overturn it. But yes, absolutely.
All right. Let's take some calls. Here's Henry on the line from Hamilton. Henry, do you have a question or a comment about this?
I have a comment. My comment is, unfortunately, too many people meddling around who have no idea, no idea whatsoever, unless you've been there. My wife was sick for over 30 years, 10 years in bed at home, 54 times in a hospital. She tried to commit suicide 3 times.
Yeah.
She made the funeral arrangements 10 years in advance. She had these recurring nightmares that she went to the local funeral home, and she woke up and just horrified because she was a reject. They didn't keep her. There was, mm-hmm, see, this isn't only how sick you are,
yeah,
or terribly sick, but the quality of life. If you cannot go out and shop and you can't do anything, you have to rely on other people. It's just pathetic. Now, I would say, if under the supervision of 2 or 3 doctors, and this person is really, beyond sick,
mm-hmm,
like Lou Gehrig's disease.
Right.
Under those circumstances, if a decision is made and this person is definitely in a sound mind, so my wife was so happy to go. Oh, my God, she was happy.
Yeah.
She was happy when the end came near, and just to be relieved.
Yeah.
It was almost, for me, it was almost a terrible experience.
How many years did this go on, Henry?
30 years.
30 years.
And the last 10 years were especially bad.
Yeah.
She had heart, lungs, she had half her stomach taken out. She had 4 eye operations, which all were disasters. And I think really what happened is her eyesight, because her immune system was so low, that's why she got infections, and even with the least little thing. She had osteoporosis so bad that her bones would just break, snap. So it's, anyway, like I say, this really, there is room on both sides.
Yeah, I hear you, Henry. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much for that story. You've heard stories like that and worse, I imagine, Wanda.
Yes.
Although
indeed.
I can't imagine much worse than that.
Well, one of the things that we do at Dying with Dignity Canada is run a client support program. And what this is given our current laws that say that nobody can be assisted, we still realize that there's room to provide information and emotional support.
Well, sure.
You know, let's say you have cancer and you say, oh, my goodness, I don't, you know, want to see this to the end. You know, I don't want to be in you know, a horrific state. While we can't assist you to die, what we can do is we can give you information to say, okay, here's a relatively painless way that you can end your life, and we can be with you at the time so that we can support you and your family as you do it. And that's a program that we've run for 30 years. And because of our experience with that program, what I can tell you is that Henry's situation with his wife is just not unique, that our clients, at the end, they are so grateful. They just say, oh, you know, I'm so thankful. You know, you've been here, just you've given me peace of mind for the first time in years, just to know that I'm in control. The only time that people are not happy to die is when they're in a situation where they're saying, I know I have to do this because I'm losing, you know, for example, someone with Huntington disease.
Yeah.
Who is losing their limb mobility. So they know that they need to take action now, because if they wait, they will no longer be able to end their lives themselves.
Well, that whole issue comes up, I believe, it's my thought anyway, with dementia, with Alzheimer's disease, where you may not wish to live 7 or 8 years, not knowing anyone around you, not having very, very little, if any, quality of life. But by then, of course, you're declared mentally incompetent, and a whole different set of issues arise.
Yes. Well, and that one, I will say that I think the solution, I mean, that's very near and dear to my heart, because my father-in-law ended up ending his life with dementia, and he spent his last months in a nursing home, tied to a chair. And, you know, my husband just looked at that and said, oh, you know, I never want that to happen to me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think we have to say as a society, well, we can only provide the support to mentally competent adults.
Well, that's where you have, I know, that's where you have to draw the line.
Someone with dementia.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'll just briefly say, and I can always direct your listeners to call us for more information, that if somebody is, you know, does have dementia or concerned they're going to go down that path, there are other options around refusing treatment, stopping treatment, including such things as flu shots and antibiotics,
yeah,
so that an individual's life isn't prolonged unnecessarily.
Well, that's just, that's along the lines of no heroic attempts being made, isn't it?
It is, and I think often when we think of heroic attempts, we think of, you know, if I have a heart attack, don't you know, no CPR,
yeah,
don't put me on life support. But there's a quite a continuum, and I know many people. Well, my father-in-law, when he had his dementia, we gave him his flu shot every year. We treated,
yeah,
an infection with antibiotics, and the kinder thing to do would have been, and certainly what he would have wanted, would have been to refuse all medication at that point.
But there's an argument there to be had on the other side too, isn't there?
Well, and I think what we can do with that is to just make sure, and certainly one thing we work with our clients and our members to do is make sure that they have advanced care plans.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That then it's very clear to say, you know, if I'm in the situation and somebody who, you know, has a family history of dementia or is concerned they might be having a few symptoms, can then say, you know, very clearly, this is what I want. And when I get to the point where, you know, I'm turning my face away from food, don't force feed me.
Yeah,
you know, that's of course
in the very least, yes.
Happens. You know, no flu shots, no antibiotics, only comfort care and symptom control.
Wanda Morris is my guest. She's Executive Director of Dying with Dignity Canada. We're talking about the federal government plan to appeal that BC ruling involving assisted suicide. Here are the numbers if you have a comment or a question of Wanda. 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
12:36 here on Zoomer Radio. Wanda Morris is with us, the Executive Director of Dying with Dignity Canada. Here are the numbers if you'd like to comment on this. The lines are full at the moment, but please keep trying. Hopefully you will get through. 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740. And we have James on the line from Hamilton. James, do you have a question for Wanda Morris?
Yes, I have a sister. She has Lou Gehrig's disease. Now, she broke her ankle, and she was put in hospital. Then from there, they put her in an old age home in Brantford. And at the present moment, there's a lot of, most of the people in there are all have dementia, you know, and there's nobody for her to speak or talk to or anything like that, basically. Her nearest relative is a daughter, and she lives in Welland. And she, that means she has to travel from Welland to Brantford in order to, you know, converse with her mother. And she's been trying to get her into a home in Welland because the facilities has to have all kinds of hoists and that to move her around.
Mm-hmm.
And that, but the one in Welland does have it, but apparently she's fourth or fifth on the list. I was wondering whether there's any way that they can speed that up, because she can't go home because there's no way anybody can look after her for 24 hours.
Well, no, I understand that. But, James, this is more a matter of care, and we're talking about people who have progressed much further down with Lou Gehrig's disease
Well, she's in the point where she can hardly put her hand to her mouth to feed, and her throat is starting to get, you know, she's got to suck on candies in order to keep the fluids going down their throat.
That's right, because that's a huge danger, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Wanda, what about this? What advice or thoughts can you give to James?
You know, James, I'm sorry that I don't have any advice to give you or support I can give you in terms of getting your sister moved. We certainly, through our client support program, do provide information about individuals so that they know all their patient rights. And if you think that would be helpful to have a conversation with our client support program manager, then by all means, you can find our information on our website, righttodie.ca. righttochoose.ca, and if your sister's rights were in any way being violated, we could, of course, advocate for you and make sure that they weren't. But it sounds like it's not that she's not getting the right care. It's just a really unfortunate situation of being in the wrong facility.
James, I hope that helps. Here's Kathy calling from Richmond Hill. Kathy, do you have a question or a comment?
I do have a comment.
Yeah.
My husband passed away a few years ago with Lou Gehrig's disease.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you those last few months in particular when he was struggling to breathe, to eat, everything in his life was a major struggle. That ability to have that right to make that decision, in my mind, is fundamental to our basic rights. I can't say it more strongly. I'm very, obviously, upset for the lady in Vancouver. I think that her wishes should truly be granted. And I think until people have been in the position of living with someone who's going through those stages, they cannot appreciate the pain and the suffering and how much it is important to them to die with dignity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wanda?
Thank you for sharing those heartfelt words. I know that we have had a number of clients over the years that have suffered from Lou Gehrig's disease, and it, you know, it is that scary prospect, that, you know, horrific ending. Not all deaths are gentle deaths. I just would really encourage you to join either Dying with Dignity Canada or another organization and help us educate our MPs so that they realize that we can, in fact, allow this right and allow it safely, and so that the result of the appeals is that Parliament puts in appropriate legislation with safeguards, and we do have this right for all Canadians.
Kathy, did you have any discussions at the time you were going through this terrible ordeal in terms of ending the life of your husband?
He and I did. I knew that was something that he wanted to do.
Yeah.
I also knew that it was something that he would never have me be involved in because of the legal ramifications.
Exactly.
And yet when it comes down towards the end, when you cannot swallow, you cannot yourself take any medication that would help that process along. So it's not something that someone with ALS can do on their own.
Yeah.
No.
Well, they're totally left out. And people just think it's such the wrong thing to do. However, yeah, they're not living themselves with that.
And your husband had, as all ALS patients do, a clear mind. He knew exactly what was going on.
Exactly. Yeah. When you go to the hospital and you deal with all the supports you get in the hospital, every time you go for a visit, you are asked what your wishes are. This is not something that the individuals take lightly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They royally know what that choice is. You know that what their rights are. You have to allow them that dignity as well in order to pass as smoothly as you can. Don't try and do anything else that might prolong the life. You
yeah.
know all of that. You do that. I did it for 2 years with him.
Yes.
So I will definitely go onto the website with it's Dying with Dignity.
Dying with Dignity Canada, yes.
Dyingwithdignity.ca is one of your websites, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
No,
thank you.
There's no law. No question, I'll go on and I'll support.
Yeah. All right, Kathy, thanks very much for telling us that story.
Yeah. Well, and Kathy brings up such an important point, is that, you know, her husband had a clear mind with the ALS, and there's a window, you know, and for individuals, you know, who we've supported, who have decided to end their lives and have hastened, they've had to go so early. That's
mm-hmm.
another tragedy of what we have, or else they decide, you know, not to go, putting someone they love at risk of up to 14 years in jail for helping them, or else facing that final months, or in that case, even years of that horrendous.
Well, you look at it this way, Wanda. I mean, whether it's legal, whether it's allowed or not, it is still an incredibly difficult decision to come to. Is it not?
Well, absolutely. And what we know from, I mean, there's a really interesting study out of Oregon that asked nurses 5 years after to talk about what it was like for doctors before and after the legislation. And what the nurses said, and I'd be delighted to give anybody that's interested the details for the study, but what the study found was that nurses said doctors were so much better at having end-of-life conversations, were better at controlling the pain of their patients,
yeah.
were better at understanding their symptoms, because it's a taboo subject right now. I mean, it's very difficult to talk to a doctor about saying, I want to die, because a doctor doesn't want to spend 14 years in jail.
Well, because the doctor looks at the criminal code and says, I have to be careful here
for
crying out loud.
Of course they do. And,
yeah.
and I mean, we know that there are doctors that from time to time will be so compassionate that they will actually break the code.
Well,
but
we know that. We know that. We suspect and know that's happened. We know
yeah.
that.
But what we need to do is have the legislation so that this can happen
yeah.
with the conversation. And when we look at what's happened in Oregon and the Netherlands, we know that the conversations are happening and that palliative care is also getting so much better simply because the conversations are no longer taboo and everyone can then can move forward to say, yes, it is a difficult decision. Let's not take it lightly. And because we can have the conversation, then everyone ends up.
Well, because when you have the conversation in that kind of situation, if that law, if it were allowed, there are no forbidden parts of the conversation.
Exactly.
The whole conversation can happen.
And then if an individual says, you know, I'm in so much pain, I want to die,
yeah.
and then the doctor can then say, well, maybe we need to fix your pain meds. You know, one of our patient rights is not to be in pain. We have the right to have sufficient medication not to be in pain. So it's, you know, another sort of supplementary benefit is that the medical care at end of life will get better as well.
Well, and we already know that's a medical problem that many people deal with, and pain doctors who specialize in pain relief already know that having access to drugs that would totally relieve the pain of somebody in a palliative situation, in many cases, are not administered anyway, and the person is dying in agony.
Yes. I know that
was a horrendous situation decades ago. I believe that particularly in urban hospitals that's gotten much better, but still we hear situations, you know, where someone says, well, gee, I wouldn't want to have the person drug addicted.
Well, give me a break.
Ludicrous, yes, when someone's dying.
Yeah.
And clearly, we absolutely have the right to make sure that our pain and symptoms are controlled. And if any of your listeners are in a situation where they feel that right is being violated, part of our client support program is to advocate for the rights of our clients, and we could certainly step in and help with that.
Wanda Morris is my guest. She's Executive Director of Dying with Dignity Canada. If you have a thought or a question, give us a call at 416-360-0740. Or 866-740-4740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
At 12:49, we're talking to Wanda Morris, Executive Director of Dying with Dignity Canada. Let's go directly to the phones, get as many calls on as we can. Martin is on the line from Fergus. Martin, what would you like to say?
Well, I'd like to say that I listened to the lady there, and when she says about common sense, she talked about you got to use common sense. Well, I can remember, I'm an old guy, so I can remember back in when they start talking, the debate was about abortion, the right to abortion. And I was told and argued by women that, but we only want to do it for people who are, you know, young girls that have been raped or mentally unstable, stuff like this, right? And I said, well, you know, once you open the door, it'll be used for birth control. And she said, oh, no, never. And they said, no way, never would be used for that. I mean, strictly for health reasons and stuff for that. Well, today we all know that abortion is just another form of birth control.
Well, let's get on to talking about euthanasia.
So euthanasia, to me, once you open the door...
Same thing, eh?
Yeah, it'd be the same thing.
Well, you mean...
Down the road, when people especially, what I would be afraid of, that down the road when the senior citizens become more... the majority in the land, which they're becoming fast, there will be people who will say, well, you know, we can't afford to keep those people in those homes. They're in the stage of growing out, so there's only another year or so, or 2 years, so why not be humane to them and just put them to sleep?
Wanda, what about that argument?
That's kind of a classic argument, and it's called the slippery slope, where someone says, you know, I understand what you're asking for now, and indeed that makes some sense to me, but look, if we open the door to this, we'll end up with X, Y, or even Z. And I think we need to be very careful and to protect the rights of the weak and vulnerable. And so let's just look at what the law is that we're asking for. And it's a law that says a mentally competent adult with an unbearable or a condition, incurable suffering, has the right, provided that. And then there's a whole host of safeguards in place. You know, for example, there's a competency assessment that individuals aware of the palliative care support they can get. They've had an independent doctor as well as their own doctor confirming the diagnosis. They've made repeated requests. So we put in, you know, a very tight framework in terms of what we would allow now. And really, we're starting with a clean slate, so we can put in any framework that we want. Now, in order for the fear that Martin has raised to come about, what would have to happen is that law would then, because that would be embedded right into the law, so that law would have to be struck down either by Parliament or through the courts. And frankly, I just don't think that's a risk. We're having a lot of discussion about whether we want this law with the safeguards. I can't imagine a situation where a government would say, well, yeah, we've had that law, we've had those safeguards, now we want to take the safeguards away. So I think that when we look at what would happen in Canada, that in fact there isn't a risk of the slippery slope. And then I think what we can do is look around at other countries and say, well what's been their experience? In the Netherlands, since 2002, in Oregon since 1997, there has been legalized choice in dying, and the criteria hasn't changed. In Oregon, an individual has to have a terminal
illness. There have been no particular points of reports of any abuse or any situations where somebody died when they should not have died or that sort of thing?
There have been occasional concerns that have been raised.
Yeah. You know,
for example, if somebody who was told in Oregon, I'm sorry, you know, we won't fund that drug, but by the way, we can help you to die if you like. So, you know, not to say that the situation is perfect, but we're also not concerned.
Well, that doesn't sound very perfect to me, I must say.
No, yeah. No. And I think, and then Oregon took a look at that, and they have now made the decision to when they're, and of course, that's how it's sort of publicized, to say, look, this is really terrible.
Yeah.
When you dig into the facts, what you realize is that the person got a letter and said, which said, you know, our policy is we will only fund drugs if there's at least a 5% chance that the person will still be alive in 5 years' time.
Yeah.
And you don't meet that criteria. However, we've got palliative care, we've got, you know, these other resources that you have, and you're also eligible for choice in dying. So,
yeah.
Of course, the real response was much more nuanced than that. Nevertheless, there was concerns about that situation in Oregon, and Oregon has now changed the way that they let people know, and they don't no longer say, oh, and by the way, you have access to choice in dying.
Martin, well, thanks.
My argument, too, is that, you say there's no hasn't been too many complaints. Well, I mean, if a daughter of mine or a son of mine decided, and if I only had one daughter or one son, and they wanted to get rid of me because I was a burden to them, if they could get the doctors to go along with it, then certainly there would be no complaint from me because they're doing what I asked them to do.
Yeah, so fair enough. But Martin, just think about what would have to happen. So first of all, yes, they'd have to get the doctor to agree. And then according to the safeguards, you would have to repeatedly request. So somehow they would have to brainwash you so that you would think, and you would repeatedly request this. And then, of course, they'd have to make sure that you had some sort of diagnosis like a cancer or an ALS.
Yeah, let me move along here. Martin, thanks very much for your call. I got a lot of callers here. I just want to get as many on as I can. Here's Sean calling from Toronto. Sean, what's your point of view?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I'm uncomfortable with the word dying with dignity. I think it's really, suicide with dignity, and I'm trying to stick to the point. It really is suicide, and if you want to make a comment about that, I just don't think it's right to call it dying with dignity. It's, in fact, suicide and suicide.
Well, regardless of what you call it, what about the practice?
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that practice of the dying with dignity.
Why? Would you like to explain why?
My belief in God. God gave us life. It's up to God to tell us when our life is over. We're created by God, and then when we go, it's because God says it's time.
Sean, thank you for bringing that up. Let me get a comment from Wanda on that. People who are religious or even perhaps highly religious, how are they to approach this kind of issue?
I think there's really three things. First of all, absolutely to validate that we're a free country and anyone is able to have whichever religious views they want.
Sure.
But secondly, to say that who are they to use the coercive power of government to impose their religious beliefs on us? This is what we're asking for is choice. What they're asking for is that no one should have the choice. And thirdly, just to respond to folks out there who may have a belief in God and who are questioning the decision or the idea that God said, thou shalt not kill. We have many supporters who belong to a religious community. One of our longtime volunteers in our client support program is a retired United Church minister, and many people that support us are Christian, and they come from the standpoint of, Jesus was fundamentally about compassion, that God gave us the choice of free will. And so what they see is that it's absolutely compatible to have religious beliefs and also to support choice in dying.
Wanda, thank you very much for all the time you spent with us today. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you so much for having me. And if I could just refer again to our website, dyingwithdignity.ca, and encourage folks to check us out.
Right.
And if they're supportive of what we do, to please join us so that we can indeed have these rights for all Canadians.
All right, thank you very much, Wanda. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
That's Wanda Morris, and she is the Executive Director of Dying with Dignity Canada. We will endeavor to get someone on from Campaign Life Coalition as well to offer you the other side of the argument, and we can continue with it in that fashion.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.